Okay, the next case we have today is Evie versus Martinez. We have three parties in this case, and the order of argument will be we will hear first from the petitioner, Evie, 20 minutes. We will then have the government for 20 minutes, the real party in interest for 20 minutes, and then if Evie has any time for rebuttal, we will have rebuttal. So are the counsel ready? Okay. We'll hear first from the petitioner, Evie.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Major Chad Evans. I'm joined by Lieutenant Colonel Deanna Daly. We represent Evie, the named victim in the case, the petitioner appellant at this court. Your Honor, I'd ask to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let's start with jurisdiction. Petitioner does not assert at the outset that Article 67 gives us express jurisdiction at this court. We are seeking a writ of petition for extraordinary relief with this court in conjunction with the All Writs Act. And at the outset, we also concede that it is not an independent grant of jurisdiction for this court, nor does it expand this court's jurisdiction. However, the All Writs Act is for the purpose of aiding this court in the exercise of its existing jurisdiction. And
you just got done saying that we don't have any independent jurisdiction under any statute. So where does that get you?
Yes, Your Honor. It gets us into the in aid of this court's jurisdiction, Your Honor. I do not believe that the All Writs Act requires that this court have actual express jurisdiction to issue a writ or grant a writ or petition for relief.
Don't we have to find subject matter jurisdiction that affects or potentially affects the findings or the sentence?
Yes, Your Honor, that is what you require, and this court laid out very well the roadmap for that in LRM versus Kastenberg.
Well, here you're dealing with a new statute. This isn't Lopez de Victoria, where you dealt with a statute that had an Article III model and came festooned with all that that imparts. You got a brand new statute. The statute says they can go to the CCA. That's it. Congress presumably wrote the statute the way they thought they wanted it. Statute says you can go to the CCA. Silence after that. So how do we have subject matter jurisdiction?
It is silent, and so you can interpret
that. Well, it's more than silent. It speaks to the CCA, and then it's silent. Now, isn't that a pretty clear indication that Congress intended this process, whatever it is, to end at the CCA level?
I don't think that that was Congress's intent, Your Honor. I believe that in leaving it silent, it allowed this court to exercise its discretion in granting writs of mandamus and petitions.
Well, then what's the point of saying anything about CCA? You could just be silent about the whole affair.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that, and this isn't supported in any congressional records because it's not on the record. There isn't a legislative history I'm aware of that speaks to that specific.
That's a problem.
It is a problem, yes, Your Honor.
But go ahead.
But I believe that that was in response to LRM versus Kastenberg.
LRM, the issue was certified, wasn't it?
It was.
And that's the hook that the majority found. Find jurisdiction.
That is the hook in that case, but the majority also recognized another hook, which was the writ appeal. And I can quote from the case that thus, as in Curtin, this court has jurisdiction over the certificate submitted by the Judge Advocate General pursuant to Article 67A2 UCMJ, as we would in the case of a writ appeal. So it gives petitioners in this scenario that discretionary option, and I believe that actually also even satisfies the dissent in that case.
So can I just follow up on your argument, though, about the word you use is believe, that you believe that more was intended by the statute when it only refers to the CCA. What are you basing that belief on, and how does that mesh with Goldsmith?
Absolutely, Your Honor. In looking at the CCA and victims' rights at that level, 6BE was intended to provide a quick relief for victims that are also holders of privileges. Now, 6B, in general, is a victim's rights statute. We're talking also about MRE 513, which is a privilege holder's right. So if you were to read that expressly as the defense and the government would have you, denying this court jurisdiction, that would mean, furthermore, that normal holders of privileges would not be able to get anywhere. They would have no jurisdiction even at the CCA. And this court stated in LRM that privilege holders have a long-standing, there's a long-standing precedent that says they have the ability to protect and claim their privilege. And one cited example was Carlson versus Smith in LRM.
Wouldn't your argument be better, though, if Congress had not explicitly included the CCA in the statute?
Yes, it would have. That is not the position that we find ourselves. And under the All Writs Act, this court still has the ability outside of 6BE to exercise its discretion in hearing this case.
Well, but you know, there's all kinds of penumbras and emanations. But here we're not looking at penumbras and emanations. We're looking at a statute. And the statute is new. And the statute hasn't been construed. And Congress elected to write the statute the way they wrote it. And it says CCAs, and it says nothing else. So we're back. Basically what you're saying is, well, they must have had something in mind. I believe there's something in mind, but that's an awful shaky basis to put subject matter jurisdiction on.
In the absence of specific authority to grant jurisdiction under Article 67, I believe the All Writs Act allows this court to exercise its discretion again on issues that are in aid of this court's jurisdiction. That means any decision.
In aid of the jurisdiction, counsel, means in aid of jurisdiction granted by some other statutory provision. Okay.
Indeed,
Your Honor. So that's what your problem is that you didn't come here under 67. Article 6 doesn't say anything about us, and so you need to find another statutory provision for us to exercise our jurisdiction in aid of. I mean, that's what Goldsmith says.
It does say that in the difference between those two cases, that case and this case, is that was a case that was outside the military justice system's jurisdiction. This case is squarely within the military justice system's jurisdiction. This is a case that findings and sentencing could be affected by the evidentiary ruling of this military judge in the case. Therefore, if you follow the chain of causation laid out explicitly in LRM, that decision will lead possibly to findings and sentencing, which is in this court's jurisdiction.
But we're a jurisdiction where this court's jurisdiction and the CCA's jurisdiction is very specifically set out by statute. And obviously Congress is aware of that because they created it. And so you certainly would think that in adopting a new statute that grants the CCA the authority to review, if they wanted it to go another step further, they would have said so.
I believe that looking at LRM, Congress saw that there very well could have seen that there was an option laid out by this court of a writ appeal through the All Writs Act that would be just as effective as creating a specific.
But that's speculating, and we can just as easily speculate to say that Congress intended these appeals to be a very short duration, get a decision from the CCA, and move on.
All right. And I guess what I would point to would be cases like Hassan versus Gross, where there is no explicit interlocutory relief for defense through Article 66, and yet jurisdiction is granted on a somewhat regular basis in those cases without discussion.
This doesn't foreclose looking at this issue in the regular course of litigation, right? It just forecloses mandamus.
I guess I'm confused by the
point. Well, wait a minute. Let me look at the statute. The statute says you can mandamus. 6BE?
It does.
Yeah, okay. So mandamus is foreclosed because statute doesn't – mandamus here on appeal from the CCA is for – if you read the statute narrowly.
Very narrowly, yes.
But, you know – the case may get here on regular appeal anyway, and we may consider issues in the regular course of appellate review.
And at that point, Your Honor, my client's harm would be perfected, if you will. Right now, it's already occurred in that the judge has pierced her records and reviewed those.
Well, that's what we have judges for.
And but further harm is...
And that's what we have CCAs for under this statute.
We do have CCAs for that, Your Honor. And right now, the services are taking a very different approach when it comes to 513. If you look at DB versus Lippert, they took a much more serious approach to the rights granted by 513 than the Navy Marine Corps.
I have a question to ask you about your brief on pages 17 to 19, where you seem to suggest that that in fact the military judge is incorrect to think that if something is constitutionally required, irrespective of whether someone took it out of the rule, that he nonetheless needs to consider that. I mean, are you seriously arguing that if evidence is deemed constitutionally required, that the fact that someone took it out of the rule means that it's irrelevant?
That is not what I intended to argue, Your Honor.
I mean, it seems like that's what you're saying.
What I intended to argue is that the U.S. versus Rodriguez and U.S. versus Custis point to the fact that MREs, when it comes to privilege, need to be ruled on based on the black letter law involved. And Rodriguez said specifically the president is going to define the contours of privileges. I don't think that a military judge should ever ignore constitutional rights that when they are at issue. But that is not the case that we have before us here today, where the constitutional rights of the defendant in this case are not going to be affected by not having access to these privileged mental health records.
Well, that's the whole question, isn't it? I mean, if you have a constitutional right to available evidence to prepare your defense, then you got a constitutional right to available evidence to prepare your defense, and it's up to the judge to decide that. But you can't knock the Constitution out of the process by amending a regulation.
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, but you're saying, well, we have to decide this on the black letter law.
Judge in NMCCA erred in finding a constitutionally required exception to Military Rule of Evidence 513. I mean, that's in big block letters. That's your subheading.
Finding that there is a constitutional right to privileged mental health records, I don't believe has happened yet in this court's jurisprudence or in Supreme Court jurisprudence. But I still... The fact that that language is eliminated from the statute, I don't believe, or the rule, I apologize, has changed the rule in any significant way.
There's a constitutional right to prepare a defense, and depending upon the particular case, that may come up. So it's not unusual that we don't have a holding from this court.
Certainly. There may possibly be a theoretical case out there where somebody's constitutional rights could be potentially impacted by this rule. That is a possibility that we are conceding. However, that scenario has not presented itself here or at the Supreme Court. And again, the NMCCA did authorize and endorse for the entire Navy the ability to weigh somebody's need for evidentiary disclosure against a person's individual right to their privacy in their mental health records.
We're kind of jumping around here. Do you have anything else to say about jurisdiction, anything more, before you go on to other issues that you may want to address?
I guess, as far as jurisdiction goes, I believe that we are squarely have jurisdiction through the All Writs Act. And we're not asking this court to expand its jurisdiction, but to take action in aid of this jurisdiction, of its jurisdiction.
Okay.
Moving on to the merits, a writ will issue if there are no other adequate means of relief, if the right is clear and indisputable, and it is appropriate under the circumstances. In this case, there are no other adequate means of relief, as you pointed out in 6BE. It could be tough to rule that one way or another. TJAG certification isn't always a great option, and it takes a long time and slows things down further. Additionally, it could impinge on the 20-day clock we have to file a writ appeal. But moving on to why this is clear and indisputable, it's clear and disputable because the military judge completely misapplied the rule in this case on several occasions. We can start in his first ruling that was actually in my client's favor. He applied the wrong standard in his original ruling denying, and he found that defense asserted a constitutionally required exception to privilege and used that basis in his determination in applying the 412 analysis. But the evidence, again, doesn't support that, as I wrote in my brief. He also found the defense didn't even meet the low standard of discovery under RCM 701, and that is the wrong standard to be applying in that situation. RCM 701F removes it from that standard. If you look at moving on to the motion to reconsider, as far as the findings of fact go, most of them, they're not erroneous, but they're irrelevant to crime fraud and to the constitutionally required issue, because that is not something that was permissibly considered under the rule. As far as specifics, I would point out that paragraph 20 in his in attachment H provides an actual definition of the anxiety, or adjustment anxiety disorder under DSM-5. In his actual analysis paragraphs later, he expanded that drastically to include something that creates a problem with perception and memory, which the DSM-5 nowhere contemplates. So he did that without any medical authority and without any psychological
Major Evans, my understanding is that this finding on this particular exception was not argued at the 39A session. It wasn't argued by the defense at all. Is that true?
The DSM-5?
No, this whole notion that this fraud exception applies.
That is true, Your Honor. It was never mentioned. The word fraud did not enter the pleadings until the military judge's supplemental ruling the day that EV filed her petition for this writ.
Right. And what's your what's your understanding of what the alleged theory of fraud is?
My understanding from the way that the military judge wrote the alleged theory was that because of the timing of her seeking treatment, that she must have been faking suicidal ideations at the Navy Marine Corps hospital on Oak Mountain.
Right, and then the follow-on is supposed to be that since she may have been doing that, we need all of her records.
Absolutely.
To investigate what?
To investigate the possibility that she was lying about being suicidal at the time she was checked in. And I pointed out, one, that some of the timing that he relied on was incorrect, that the defense also relied on was incorrect. And also, if this court rules that that was an appropriate sua sponte finding in contravention of MRE 513E4, that he is still using the improper eliminated D8 exception from MRE 513, because those records, some of the records that he pierced, could not have in any way been used to effectuate the fraud that he is alleging.
Let me ask you this, too. Now, you take issue with the fact that the military judge used the constitutionally required exception. Notwithstanding the fact that the exception has been removed, do you concede that there's still some constitutional issues or concerns that the accused in a criminal trial might have still?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The ability to confront witnesses, to present inconsistent statements against them, to provide evidence of bias and motive, and the defense has had ability in this case.
Counsel,
I'm sorry, go ahead, sir.
I'm just going to see this time has expired. If you have another question.
I had one other question.
Go ahead.
So my question then would be, what is the significance of, if any, of the fact that the rule, that the exception was removed from the rule?
I believe that the exception being removed
indicated what to you?
Indicated that the government, the military, was trying to fall more in line with Yaffe versus Redmond in its application of mental health privilege. That's what that signaled to my client and to this court as well.
Okay, but you can't find anything that suggests that the drafters of the rule were revisiting Jaffe at all?
I could not find anything in the record.
I understand.
Okay, you'll have additional time on rebuttal. Okay, the court will now hear from the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court. May it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Commander Justin Henderson, along with Colonel Mark Jameson. I represent the United States. To find jurisdiction over appellant's petition for relief would require this court to read language into Article 6B that Congress didn't write, and in so doing, expand its jurisdiction beyond the narrow confines of Article 67. Now, with respect to my friend, he asserts that Article 6B has to essentially require this court to review decisions brought under Article 6B at the CCAs. But Congress didn't write that. And if this court were to ignore the plain language, even to search for some other intent, this court would be rewriting the statute improperly. Congress directed petitions for mandamus to the CCAs specifically so that courts-martial that are ongoing can continue apace without extensive interlocutory review.
Do you know that was the reason, or are you just speculating that was the reason?
It is consistent with the omission of this court from the 6B rules in the same way that it could have provided had this court been written into the 6B.
But there's nothing in the record.
There is nothing in the record about Article 6B, but there is also no timeline that would mirror 18 U.S.C. 3771 that keeps courts-martial going apace. So that signals that the plain language, CCAs, are the sole avenue to perfect writs of mandamus.
Could the JAG have certified this very question itself?
Yes, Your Honor.
And would that be a different situation? I assume it would be.
It would be a different situation.
Of significance, I mean.
Yes, Your Honor, because it would bring Article 67 to bear before this court.
Should we be concerned by that the government gets a second bite of the apple and the victim does not?
No, and to be clear, a JAG certification is one method by which petitioner could have brought a writ appeal to this court. If this matter were directly affecting the findings and sentence at the court-martial, the petitioner, had they not disclaimed Article 67 as a basis for review, could have made a colorable claim that the protections in 6B were within the Article 67C ambit of this court's existing jurisdiction.
Okay, but that's not quite responsive. Here, the government has a separate avenue, unilateral action it can take without worrying about the jurisdiction that you just referred to. Does this matter, does that fact matter in terms of how this court should rule, that the government would have a second bite of the apple?
No, Your Honor, not on this case.
Is that because she could seek TJA certification also?
She has the same rights to TJAG certification. She also has access to Article III courts. But more importantly, appellant in this
matter... She has access to Article III courts. How? For what?
If for whatever reason, the military judge in a given matter had flubbed the military rule of evidence of the 6B protection at issue, and the CCA had likewise just ignored the rules and their responsibilities, then Article III courts have jurisdiction to
issue a stay. I think that's a very dubious problem. That Article III courts have habeas jurisdiction, or what are we talking about?
To enjoin
a court martial, they tried that out in Washington State. you got any other authority for that proposition?
No, Your Honor, and I meant to only invoke the very narrow privilege under MRE 13.
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying that an article that a U.S. District Court can directly review a military judge's action with respect to 513? What are you saying? And where, how do you get there?
It is not the position of the United States that victims in pursuit of perfecting their Article 6B rights should seek Article 3 intervention.
And that's not my question. It's not up to the United States whether they seek Article 3 intervention. My question is, how do you get there? What authority do they have?
The 6B protections that they seek to perfect.
Does 6B confer Article 3 jurisdiction?
No, not.
Well, then here we are again.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And that is not the avenue that this particular appellant should have pursued. But to answer,
I mean, it's not up to you to tell this particular appellant what he or she should do. You're the government.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
To answer Judge Olson's question, and I apologize for getting us off track.
I got us off track.
I certainly helped, Your Honor. This particular appellant has JAG certification as a review, but importantly, if a matter affected findings and sentence, would be in a different position than the appellant in CCR was in. And where this court told that third party they didn't have any matter that brought Article 67 jurisdiction to bear, if an appellant were in a position like Kastenberg, where there was evidence that was on the cusp of being entered, in Kastenberg, it was a Military Rule of Evidence 412 motion to admit, then that issue would be different. But here we don't even have an evidentiary admissibility question. All we have is a discovery question. And we're not even at the point where the 15 heavily redacted pages of the 83 psychotherapist patient records are potentially in the court. So that brings a little bit of a ripeness issue.
Yeah, are you saying it's not ripe?
In this particular case, it is not ripe.
It's not ripe.
Yes, Your Honor, and I don't want
to... Counsel, doesn't the victim have an interest in having her privilege retained against even members in the courtroom, even the parties?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, so to say it's not right, but hasn't the military judge ruled that at least 15 pages of this are ready to be disclosed to the defense?
He has, Your Honor.
Right.
And so that brings the 6B issue into ripeness for review by the CCA.
I see.
So that satisfies the 6B requirement. But for this court's 67C review, we just don't have anything that is going to impact findings or sentence yet. And an appellant, in disclaiming Article 67 as a basis, hasn't even established that there could be a potential impact on findings and sentence. The last thing I'll address with regard to jurisdiction is the nature of the mandamus requested. This particular statute directs appellants in the position of this particular appellant to seek mandamus to have a court martial follow a rule. But appellant has not requested that a court martial follow a rule. Appellant has requested a mandamus to set aside a ruling and hasn't established a jurisdictional basis for the issuance of that writ. And if a writ cannot lie, then there's no jurisdiction to hear it.
So you're saying they have the wrong writ? Is that what you're saying?
It's not the writ provided for in 6B, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The All Writs Act, as we all know, doesn't confer jurisdiction, and it can't expand Article 6B. Appellant disclaims Article 67. There is no basis and no showing that the issue is going to impact the findings and sentence. In such a case, this matter should be returned speedily to court-martial for prosecution.
Thank you, Counsel. The Court will now hear from the real party in interest.
Chief Judge Redmond, members of the court, good morning. and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Agaton West. I represent the real party in interest, Sergeant David Martinez. This court does not have jurisdiction over the petitioner's claims. CAF is a court of limited jurisdiction whose authority is defined by statute through Article 67 of the UCMJ. Contrary to the petitioner's claims, this court does not have jurisdiction under the All Writs Act either. The Act is not a separate grant of statutory jurisdiction, and it does not expand a court's already existing jurisdiction. This court also does not have jurisdiction under Article 6B of the UCMJ. The plain and unambiguous language of the statute does not state that CAP has jurisdiction, but rather clearly limits that authority to the service courts of criminal appeals. Finally, if this court does find jurisdiction, the petitioner has not demonstrated a clear and indisputable right to the requested writ. The military judge analyzed the requirements of MRE 513. He received briefing and argument from all parties, including the petitioner, and then determined that discovery was appropriate after in-camera review. Turning to the court's specified issue first, the court does not have statutory authority to exercise jurisdiction over CCA decisions pursuant to Article 6B. There are two reasons for this. First of all, the language of 6B only grants alleged victims the opportunity to challenge procedural violations and not substantive disagreements of law. Secondly, the plain language of the statute only authorizes Article 6B review at the service CCAs and not CAF. The language of Article 6B is plain and unambiguous here, and Congress knows how to grant CAF separate statutory authority from the CCAs, as evidenced by the juxtaposition of Article 66 and Article 67. As Article 6B is not a statutory grant of jurisdiction, CAF would only be able to hear this case pursuant to Article 67. Now, CAF's Article 67 jurisdiction is limited, and there are only three ways to get to CAF through Article 67. Whether that's an affirmed death sentence at the CCA, JAG certification, or a petition by the accused and good cause shown. None of those three are present in this case. And if Article 67 does not give this court jurisdiction, then the court cannot issue a writ unless the petitioner can point to another source of statutory authority. Here, however, the petitioner has failed to do this. The plain and unambiguous language of Article 6B does not grant this court jurisdiction, and this case is not properly before this court under Article 67. Because this court does not have jurisdiction over the petitioner's claim, it cannot issue the requested writ. Turning to the court's first granted issue, whether or not the NMCCA erred in this case, the CCA did not err in denying the petitioner her requested writ. The petitioner failed to demonstrate the clear and indisputable right to the writ. The petitioner was represented by counsel and heard by the military judge regarding her position on the discovery of her mental health records. And MRE 513 and Article 6B do not grant a petitioner the right to have a military judge come to an agreement with their interpretation of the MREs. If the record indicates, as it does here, that the petitioner's procedural rights under MRE 513 were not violated, then the petitioner does not have a clear and indisputable right to the writ. The NMCCA has the power under Article 6B to issue the writ, but only if a procedural right was violated. Here, there was no procedural violation, and the NMCCA did not err.
She claims that there's a procedural violation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, let's be fair. I mean, it's not that it couldn't apply. I mean, you're arguing that there was no procedural violation, but she argued to the CCA that there was a procedural violation.
Correct, Your Honor. And the NMCCA has the authority to determine whether or not that violation occurred. Their denial of the writ is, I guess, evidence that they found that that violation did not, in fact, occur. Turning to the court's second granted issue, if this court does find jurisdiction, the petitioner has not demonstrated a clear and indisputable right to the requested writ. The military judge did not commit a usurpation of judicial authority or a clear abuse of discretion. Now, whether analyzed under Clemick or MRE 513E, the outcome is the same in this case. The judge cited Clemick, but still found as fact the additional prong of MRE 513 that was established. The defense, in brief and argument, cited a specific factual basis that the communications would yield admissible evidence under an exception to MRE 513. The information was not merely cumulative, and in fact it didn't exist anywhere else, and reasonable efforts to obtain the evidence would have been fruitless, as they only existed in one source. Further, the judge found the enumerated exception required under MRE 513D in the form of the crime fraud exception. Now, MRE 513 states that the burden is a preponderance of the evidence to show that the requested information meets an enumerated exception. There is no heightened burden or level of scrutiny that has to be shown in this case, and the judge absolutely had enough information to show that the 513D crime fraud exception was in fact satisfied in this case. Now, whether or not the evidence relied on by the judge and cited by the defense counsel at trial disproves the alleged assault is not the appropriate standard here. What matters is if the judge usurped his judicial authority in determining that the four factors of MRE 513 and Klemek were in fact satisfied. This is not a case like the Army CCA case of Lippert, where the defense made a blanket and unsupported, she's making this up so we need her records type assertion. Here, the defense counsel can point to actual events that cast doubt on the story and indicate that the petitioner is manipulating the system for a possible benefit, i.e. fraud. Now, the defense
counsel,
also
said, can you go through that a little bit? This notion, I'm not saying that derisively at all, but the theory that there's been a fraud or attempted fraud on the part of the victim when she was trying to get her humanitarian transfer. Can you lay out what you think your client's theory of the fraud is?
Yes, Your Honor. I would point the court to the defense's motion for reconsideration, specifically paragraphs CC through AAA, as well as pages 11 through 13 of their brief. They allege they cite episodes including the petitioner's prior infidelity, the fact that she was seen romantically involved with the accused that evening, the timing of the allegation, and that the accused was about to leave Okinawa, and thus any chance that a humanitarian transfer would have been lost had he no longer been on Okinawa.
Right, but if you know all that now, what is it in the medical records that would add to that? If the theory is to impeach the witness based upon her less than sincere efforts to seek treatment, what don't you have enough to do that now?
Well, certainly there's a modicum of evidence here that the defense can
rely on. Does the Constitution require that you get the best opportunity or just an opportunity to cross-examine?
It certainly does not say the best opportunity here, Your Honor, but I would point back to the standard that the military judge has to follow in this case. It's not whether you or I have an agreement with his decision to order a piercing of the record. Did he commit a clear usurpation of judicial authority? There is not enough evidence on the record to show that he did in this case. Now, the defense also cited the constitutional exception, and the judge partially relied on this as well. But despite its removal from MRE 513, removing the constitutional exception from the rule makes it no less required. But even if it can be removed, the judge's ruling is still saved by the crime fraud exception. And this court need not address the constitutional issue. It is this court's practice to decide cases on non-constitutional grounds when possible, and this court can do that here as well. As to the petitioner's claim that the judge made up a reason when he issued his supplemental ruling, that is irrelevant. First, there's nothing in the rules that prevent a judge from supplementing his ruling. Secondly, based on the jurisdiction of the appellate courts under Article 6,
if the judge is going to come up with an exception not argued by the parties, shouldn't he give them an opportunity to be heard on the issue?
Now, if a judge were, in fact, to do that, Your Honor, he would be required to. But the record, as shown in this case, shows that did not, in fact, happen here. The defense, in brief, both in its statement of facts and in its arguments section, laid out a de facto invocation of the crime fraud exception. They even argued this at the 39A hearing when they said, there is a motive to fabricate when it comes to getting off of Okinawa. Evie went to extreme lengths to obtain a transfer request. This is a tactical decision and a calculation to obtain a material benefit. Further, the petitioner was heard on this exact issue at the 39A hearing when they said, and I quote, they're speculating that her motive, that one, that she lied, period, and two, that she lied to get off of the island. They addressed the crime fraud exception.
But they didn't explicitly say that that's what they were talking about?
They did not specifically use the term crime fraud exception,
okay,
Your Honor, but there was a de facto invocation of that exception, both in the pleadings and at the argument. Turning back to the judge's supplemental ruling, based on the jurisdiction of the appellate courts under Article 62, 66, and 67, there would not normally be a need for a judge to elaborate greatly on a defense-friendly discovery ruling. It's not appealable. It's not an appealable decision under Article 62, and the defense normally wouldn't challenge that under Article 66 either. The supplemental ruling was only to assist the appellate courts when it became clear that a ruling that would normally not be appealed was in fact being appealed. However, this does not give the petitioner the right to say that she did not have a chance to be heard on the issue in which the military judge ultimately based his ruling. This court lacks jurisdiction to entertain the petitioner's claim. Congress has narrowly defined caste jurisdiction, and this case does not fall under it. Even if this court does find jurisdiction, the petitioner failed to demonstrate a clear and indisputable right to the requested writ. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Do we have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I'd like to just address briefly the material benefit argument of the defense that was just made. If this court finds that the judge was correct and that she was seeking a material benefit for going back home after being sexually assaulted in Okinawa, that's essentially saying that obtaining a crutch after breaking your leg is a material benefit. Chemotherapy after being diagnosed with cancer is a material benefit. Are we going to punish victims for seeking humanitarian transfers by invariably piercing their privileged records in violation of not only MRE 513, but also Article 6?
Counsel, I think you're overstepping to suggest that the military judge was seeking to punish your client, that there was any sort of ill intent or bad motive. That's completely unfounded in the record.
Maybe I should clarify if that is upheld.
If you're talking about the way that the real party in interest counsel characterized it, that's fine, but let's keep the comments where they belong.
Fair enough, Your Honor. My apologies. That material gain, finding that to be some type of crime or fraud from here on out in the future would absolutely chill people seeking treatment and seeking expedited transfer or humanitarian transfers, which the Air Force and other branches of the service provide as treatment to help get over sexual assaults.
Counselor, I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge.
I have two questions, which is one, do you agree or disagree that the statute could be amended to include jurisdiction by this court as well if Congress so chose?
It could be amended that way if they chose to.
And secondly, other than making broad policy arguments, let's say that we got to the specified issues. How exactly, in your view, did the military judge abuse his discretion?
Several ways, Your Honor. One, by misapplying MRE 513, finding a constitutionally required exception in this case that was specifically eliminated. It goes against U.S. versus Rodriguez and U.S. versus Custis in terms of the president is allowed to set the terms on which privileges are decided in military courts. And courts are not to import common law exceptions or other exceptions, and with the caveat that maybe there is a hypothetical situation where constitutionally required issue could come up, they are still to apply it as written by the president through his rules. Additionally, he abused his discretion in failing to provide any notice and opportunity to be heard on the crime fraud exception. Typically, when crime fraud exceptions are brought up, somebody that is being accused of that has the opportunity to rebut what is generally required to be a prima facie case. Otherwise,
you don't disagree that the real party in interest counsel in their motion for reconsider did basically say that they believed that there was going to be information related to her motive to fabricate, et cetera, in the mental health records?
They did say that, and I would say that went towards bias, motive to fabricate, which are constitutional considerations that go towards that eliminated prong of MRA 513. I'd like to address jurisdiction briefly. We had a chance to address the innate of this court's jurisdiction through Article 67 because it could have an effect on findings and sentencing because it's an evidentiary ruling. There's the prong that requires it to be appropriate and necessary, and there are several hooks that get us in on that prong as well. My client holds procedural and substantive rights under Article 6B, A8, and 513. The privilege is not just procedural. The privilege itself is a right, as established by the rule and 6B-A-8. Additionally, Evie is not a stranger to this court. She was the named victim in the case. The harm has occurred is absolutely right. The military judge has pierced the records, and a stay from this court is the only thing that is currently preventing further evisceration of her privilege under MRA 513.
6B does provide a right to your client, but isn't it a procedural right, a right to be heard?
Under 6BA8, Your Honor, it is a right to be treated with dignity and fairness with respect to a victim's privacy as well.
Well, but that doesn't translate into a right under the law to win.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. But it does translate into a right to have the rule applied as it is written and a chance to actual reasonable notice and a chance to be heard on all of the issues that are actually being contemplated. And the crime fraud was not. 513E4, and I mentioned this earlier, but it's not in any of the filings. It requires that to meet one of the requirements of the enumerated exceptions to the privilege under subsection D of this rule, and are included, to release or produce evidence, it must be stated already under E1A, and it was not in this case. It was never specifically sought prior to the military judge's ruling.
The government says that they talked about it during the Article 39A session, but they weren't explicit in actually saying this is the rule under which the defense was operating. So does that make a difference? Or are you saying that they have to actually say the rules, like which rule it is by the number and letter?
I think that they need to follow 513E, A through D, and present evidence on each of those cases, on each of those issues, for each of the proposed exceptions that apply. And there's a big difference in defending against the proposed rule that the defense had, which is the constitutionally required. They never suggested anything else in any of their filings, which is not an enumerated exception. The defense against that is very different than the defense against something that is actually an enumerated exception, the D5. So the opportunity was completely lost, and the type of defense would be extremely different. The petitioner could have sought to put on evidence to rebut the facts that defense is speculating that she wanted to leave the island for any reason other than the fact that she was sexually assaulted by the police.
Are you saying that she was deprived of an opportunity of notice and to be heard, even though the issue was raised, because the magic words weren't invoked?
Your Honor, I'm saying that they did not raise that issue. And it's not subject to that interpretation if you're looking at how it was argued, which was in the context of bias and motive to fabricate, which are typically and understood to be constitutionally required. I see that my time is ended.
You may briefly conclude.
In this case, the military judge clearly abused his discretion multiple times in this case. My client never had a chance to address the problems that he created by introducing the crime fraud exception, and the Navy Marine Corps Court of Criminal Appeals got it wrong by denying her writ appeal at their level. This court has the opportunity and the discretion to fix that issue, amend the harm, and also create uniformity within the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Thank you, counsel. And the court thanks counsel for all the parties. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until further order of the court.
Court is adjourned until further order of the court.